This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. My name is Rich Bradbury. As usual, I'm joined in the studio today by
Arif Roos
and
Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. And for a lot of you listening in, you might have forgotten Richard Bradbury.
This is me. This is what I sound like.
He's back after a long...
It's been a while, hasn't it? It's been a while.
So let's start with child seats.
Let's start with child seats.
So shall we introduce the part one, part two? Part
yes, of course. We've got two parts of the show. Part one will all be about news and some local car launches. And then towards the end of the show, part two, the feature, is the Mercedes-Benz A200 sedan.
Wow.
Yes. Now, off with the news, Mr. Arif Roos.
Right, so this week's news is actually just a lot of complaining about the problems that we have. The first, as Daniel said just now, is all about child seats. And this was actually released last week, and everybody was going crazy. Basically, because
it's a stupid rule.
It's a stupid rule because the government is considering exempting large families from the child seat ruling, which is mental.
The more things you put inside, okay, let's imagine you've got a small metal box, mm-hmm. right? And in that metal box, you put six or seven small objects and you rattle that box around, those six or seven small objects are going to battle and hit one another, aren't they?
Yeah.
The chances of there being, if you put less things inside that box and rattle them around, the chances of those things hitting one another is less.
Yes.
So you would think, logically, you would implement this rule for everybody. You know, if there's a car seat for one person, one child, and there's two children, you need two car seats. You need three car seats, whatever it is. I know there's an expense involved in it. I get that. But children are expensive. Deal with it.
Yeah, that's precisely the thing that they were saying. Like, if families have too many children, you can't fit an entire family into a Proton Exara because there'll be not enough space that's occupied mm-hmm. by the child seats. So...
Well, let's ask another question. In the back seat of a car, Daniel, I'll ask you, you're the expert, you're the car expert.
If you say so.
In the back seats of a Exora, for example, how many seat belts are there?
Two, right?
For two people. And then there's one in the middle that comes across your lap normally,
correct.
Isn't there?
So that, but you see, the thing is, the moment you put a child seat in, and you know, we've looked at all the various sizes, and we actually spoke about this on air, on a different show last week. The thing is, the moment you put two proper child seats in the middle row, the person in the middle cannot be my size. Arif's size can.
You're right.
It has to be someone slim, small size, because even someone tall like you will not fit in.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Right.
And it just makes more sense to me that safety should become more important than moving the other kids around. You know? Yep.
Guys, yep. I totally agree with everything you all are saying, but I have to take the other side. Okay,
what?
Why? Because
he's a parent.
Yes, I'm a parent. You see, assuming now, go back 15 years and this ruling came in. Mm. I've got two kids. Mm. My father used to live with me. My mom used to live with me before they passed on.
Yeah,
and we had a housekeeper.
Yeah,
a foreign housekeeper. Now, I couldn't fit all of them into an MPV mm-hmm. if I had full size child seats. Mm. So at that time, because there was no law, we only had one child seat, and the second child will basically sit on someone's lap with the seat belt. And half the time, the seat belt won't be worn because the person that's having them on the seat belt, whether it's any one of the grandparents, will say, never mind lah, you know?
They're uncomfortable.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And we got away with it.
Yeah.
Now, if that ruling came in 15 years ago, I can't go out and immediately change my car to suit accommodating everyone. So then people will come and say, okay, you need two cars. Two cars means two times petrol, two times parking, two times toll, two times everything else. It just isn't viable in our economic situation. And I'll explain again why.
Yeah.
If we lived in a wonderful country like where Richard comes from, where car prices are quite low, then we can afford to do this. But in a country where cars are so expensive, a simple Exora is so expensive, a Perdua Arus is so expensive, for the below average wage earner, they can't afford it.
Yep. Yep.
So so-called easy solution would be to reduce car prices or improve public transport.
Or have less children.
Or have less children.
Okay. If you want to improve public transport, then you take the $1 billion you're going to spend on the third national car.
Which we'll be talking about shortly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and we'll get to that soon.
Yep. So, third national car, more details of it have surfaced since we last heard of it, which was maybe in sometime in September. And details of it actually came from a report done by FN Huang Capital Research. And they said that DreamEdge will build a B-plus segment car. So B-segment, I guess, is a Vios. It's going to be a slightly bigger Vios or City. And it'll be powered by internal combustion engine or a hybrid. So promises of electric vehicles or a... That's all gone.
Battery powered. Yep.
But DreamEdge Punya CEO, he said that it will not be another rebadged Daihatsu, despite what everybody's saying.
Despite what I said.
Despite what you said.
Just a few weeks ago.
Yep.
And, despite seeing it.
And he said that Daihatsu will just assist in the development of the powertrain and platform. What exactly assists means?
He forgets that we have Instagram and photos.
Yes. Right? And the thing is, Daihatsu as a company is not building these models. So what assistance are they going to give? If they're going to give any assistance, okay, call me silly, they might as well produce their own car.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Daihatsu doesn't produce anything bigger than a small car,
exactly.
A Myvi.
And the new concept, so-called compact crossover or whatever, which is a Toyota Razor, which is doing very well in Japan right now, that is also a compact vehicle.
So how are they gonna...
And it's petrol driven. And that might come as a Perdua.
Well, anyway, the FM1 Capital Research report did say that the new national car project will, you know, include 90% of local content, which means that it will benefit from the upcoming national automotive policy in 2019. This could be causing perhaps the delay of this policy release.
Well, I was going to say, isn't that our next piece of news?
Yes, that is our next piece of news.
It's an interesting day. What a wonderful Wednesday.
The other thing they said also is that the new national car project will include car connectivity, smart vehicle system, and advanced driver assist systems, which currently all cars already do have. So it's not really a, you know, boasting thing. And their target will apparently be 3,000 units per month in the first year.
Right. That's 36,000 units a year, which means you're going to cannibalize from Perdua and Proton, most definitely, and a little bit from Toyota and Honda.
Hopefully, yes.
Who are all having factories here.
Yes.
Using local vendors.
Yes.
Employing local people.
Implementing new EV technology.
Yes.
Yep.
And having local showrooms and after sales and everything. So what you're doing is you're just spreading it out a little bit evenly, but gambling with 1 billion ringgit.
The thing is also that the report states that the new national car project will probably do something like contract manufacturing, which they won't build their own production plan. They'll instead use existing production plans, which some people are saying it could just be Prodo's plans or Toyota's plans. So in the end, they're still not really building anything that benefits
them. So you cannibalize from the company and then you go back and say, build this for me.
The final big thing that I'll say about this is that from the report, the cost overruns could reach 1 billion ringgit.
Oh, small potatoes.
Small potatoes.
No big deal.
We're always talking
potatoes,
about...
Potatoes, potatoes.
We're always used to talking about losing money one way or another. Right?
Yeah,
I mean, I mean, the 37 billion ringgit was just written off just like that, right?
47, wasn't it?
47, yeah. Wow. Yeah. That just seems like...
I think we've been losing 47 billion ringgit every year since 2013.
Mm. Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, 1 billion is just nothing to them,
Nothing. So, especially with our exchange rate right now.
So,
but on a happy... Let's have a happy piece of
happy
news.
Piece
have
of
you
news,
got anything, Arif?
No.
No. This one's about the national automotive policy, as I said before, and it's facing a lot more delays. So apparently, according to Daniel Fernandez's website, it should be out... on Friday the 13th.
Yes. What a date.
What a date. And we just know we could be disappointed on that date.
Yes. And the thing is, you see, I wrote this article after meeting with a lot of, not a lot, maybe 7-8 car company bosses, not senior management, because a lot of them are worried to say anything. I'm talking about, you know, middle management, but, you know, important enough to share their thoughts, their worries, their feelings with me. And these people have been in the industry for a long time, whether in the same brand or moving across other brands. And they're asking, you know, with this happening, first of all, we have invested so much in factories, local assembly. Some of them even invest back with their vendors.
Yeah.
Some of them are invested in 3S and 4S centers. Some of them looking forward to expansion, have, you know, worked with colleges to bring in these automotive students to start working with them. So all this, and then suddenly you have something that's put on hold. And it's put on hold because of a few factors. And one of the factors is the third national car. The second factor is whether the electric car program is going ahead or not. And then they suddenly see investment going into our neighbors, Indonesia and Thailand.
Mm.
So you're talking about battery manufacturing. I'm talking about EV batteries. We're talking about contract manufacturing. We're talking about even some vendors moving overseas because there's no point. Then, of course, there's big news like, you know, Subaru opening a new plant in Bangkok.
And Mercedes just opened a new battery plant in
Thailand. Exactly. And then Hyundai has actually signed an agreement that they're going to start building cars for the region in Indonesia. So when you hear all this and you think to yourself, we have really brought our industry down.
We've dropped the ball.
Exactly. And, you know, it's sad because we were the leaders at one time. Yes, industry volume has not dropped by a lot. But that's because people are buying more lower-priced cars because people still need mobility.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
And the used car market is thriving as usual. But, you know, the premium market is really suffering. But I don't feel any pain for them because they're premium. And the premium market always have bigger markets to compensate our market.
Yeah.
But it's the middle segment players like, you know, like Honda, Mazda, Toyota, Nissan, they're all having a tough time.
Do you think it's mostly caused by just the entire delay of this? Because it was supposed to, the NEP was supposed to be launched in, September 2018?
Well, if you want to launch a car today, if say your brand A and you want to launch a brand new car, if the NEP has not been confirmed, you don't know whether, should I do local assembly? Should I import? Should I work with an ASEAN tariff? Should I not launch at all? Or you said, no, I've already planned with my home country 2 years ago to bring this car in. I have to bring it in, like some of them actually did.
Yeah.
They bring the car in and then they got this until approved price. And then when you have a price, let's say now you say the price is 120,000, but we wait for final approval. The price could drop to 110, it could go up to 130. But what happens to the showroom? The showroom has overheads to upkeep.
Mm-hmm.
So consumers come in wanting to buy the vehicle. Oh, it's about 120,000. Okay, can I put my money down? Yes, you can put your money down. But I can't deliver the car to you because I don't know the final price. So they're collecting all these booking fees. But the booking fees does not pay the overhead salaries and everything else. And salespeople earn from the final sale
right.
of the vehicle.
Yeah.
A booking fee, they don't earn anything. And then you got the secondary industry, the tinted glass guys, the coating guys, the paint guys, and everything else. The aftermarket parts that go into a car like a stereo and mud flaps and car covers and leather and everything else. So they're also slightly, you know, held back. So there is a domino effect. And,
yeah.
you know, the domino effect is not seen by the common man.
Mm-hmm.
So after I did this article, a lot of my readers, who I consider the common man, are actually starting to open their eyes and say, you know, why are these businesses going overseas? Why then coming to Malaysia? We have English. We have a good transportation system. We've got ports. We've got a skilled workforce. Why are we not getting all these businesses? Because if I'm brand A and I want to do business in Malaysia, I go to MITI, I go to MOF, and I go to all these places. Not yet, not yet, not yet, not yet, not yet. Okay lah.
I go
to Thailand. Sign, done. Please, come.
Yeah.
I go to Indonesia. Indonesia now is exactly the same as Thailand. Sign, deal, done, come.
And it's absolutely worth mentioning that Thailand started that journey to revolutionize and update their entire automotive industry at the start of this year.
Yes.
And since then, they have really done everything. They're talking about things in 1 month, 2 month, three month at most timelines. And that has completely changed everything for them. Well, at least viewing it from
this
here.
This is the problem. It's like, once they come here, it's like we have to have a meeting about this, that. We're not sure about this.
Yes.
We're not sure about that.
Yes.
It's just this kind of backpedaling all the time instead of standing firm and actually moving forward and driving an industry.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and that's the issue. It's just this umming and ahhing. It's just like, just get it done.
And the thing is, you see, what the bigger picture is, when you don't have these industries coming here, you're earning less income tax.
Yeah.
When you learn less income tax, the current generation, not Richard, you and me, Arif, will be taxed more. You know, and when we tax more, we are now retarded in our spending power. And we're retarded. We can't afford that nicer car. We can't afford that nicer house.
Mm.
We can't afford kwetia goreng with duck egg. You know, we have to get normal egg.
It's sort of like a double whammy because, you know, the Prime Minister is always talking about like we have to revolutionize our industry.
Yes.
We have to do all this and all of that just to upskill all our workers. But then we're losing all the potential people who exactly. want to come to us and help us do that. You know, instead, we want to start our own thing.
Yeah. Can you imagine if just two companies came here? The battery company for EVs and Hyundai. Mm. If these two companies just opened, these two factories came here, whoa!
Yeah.
The amount of money that will come in, because these things are going to be exported. Yeah. Made here, yeah. exported. Like solar panels. Do you know solar panels are made in a huge
yeah. Yeah.
number in Malaysia and exported? Great income. But that's not under automotive.
We better move on. We're running out of time on this segment. Yeah. We need to move on to launches, local launches then.
So,
happened yesterday morning?
Yesterday morning, myself and Daniel went to visit Mercedes-Benz and their launch of the GLC facelift. It's basically a very, very welcome facelift because the old GLC was getting old. It was getting super outdated. It wasn't actually a very pleasant thing to look at. So what they did was gave the car new lights, new grills, new rear lights that are very, very nice to look at. The digital cluster, as well as their brand new infotainment system called MBUX. So they've launched three models, the GLC 200 that now starts at 300,000 ringgit. It used to start at about 265, something like that, right? But they say it comes with a new engine and all these new fancy bits, better equipped as well.
True.
And then you have the GLC 300, which now costs 350,000 ringgit, but you also get a new engine and you have all of these fancy things. You can also buy the GLC 300 Coupe, which is 420,000 ringgit. A lot of money, but same deal. New engine, new everything, better equipped.
And you know, like we were saying earlier, all these car companies are doing launches. And then what do they do at the end of the price? Estimated.
Yes,
yep.
Estimated.
Yeah. Because they just aren't sure.
Yes, and this is all local assembled.
Yeah.
They are helping the economy.
Just a final thing, along with car launches yesterday, they launched this thing called Mercedes Me Connect.
Mm.
So if you drive a Mercedes right now, you scroll all the way to the end of your page, you'll see that thing that says Me. But when you press it, it doesn't work. But apparently now it does, because it's basically an online function that enables you to sort of like remote start your car through your smartphone and all that stuff. You can also like see your car's telemetries, the oil level, the fuel level, how much range you have. So it's pretty cool. The coolest part about this, though, is you can actually buy a dongle to put into your older Mercedes, and they say it will work on any older Mercedes up to 2002.
No, from 2002.
From 2002,
from
sorry.
2002 onwards, you can just buy it. But they haven't given a price to the dongle,
they haven't
right?
given it. Probably estimated, too.
Exactly, exactly.
Folks, stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We'll be talking all about the Mercedes-Benz A-Class Saloon. It's all coming up in just a... Sorry, the sedan.
Sedan, yes.
Saloon, saloon sedan.
Saloon.
Saloon.
Same, place where you go and have a drink.
Or a haircut. That's a salon. We'll be right back. You're listening to Cruise Control here on BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. You're tuned into Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello.
Hello, Richard and Arif.
And the man with the news, of course, Mr. Arif Roos.
Hello, everybody.
If you've only just tuned in, we've been taking to pieces some of the news that we've had this week. Child car seats again, National Car Project again, National Automotive Policy yet again. All delayed, all having problems. Let's move on to something a little bit nicer, shall we? A little bit of a review.
Yes,
it's been a while. It's been a while.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been 2 weeks.
Is it still the most aerodynamic sedan on sale?
Yes, it is. The new A-Class sedan. But I got to correct you, because they corrected me. A-Class Saloon.
Okay.
What?
If you go online and check, it's called the A-Class Saloon. Don't call it sedan.
Okay,
it
okay.
So
okay.
Difference between sedan saloon is?
One place you can have a drink.
One place you just sit down.
You sit down.
You sit down.
So... You guys think you're funny, eh?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do it. Very funny, very funny.
Okay, anyway. So previously, again, this is a bit unusual. The A-Class hatchback, when it came with a boot, it was called a CLA.
Mm-hmm.
And the CLA sold very well. It was also very aerodynamic. It came with a few variants. It came with the older generation of engines, which did quite a good job. Prices was around 220, 230, and then onwards. Now comes, early this year, the launch of the A-Class Saloon. So why not the CLA anymore? It's a global thing. They're changing the naming and whatever else. So that's fine. Let them do what they want to do. They got a reason for it. It's probably not for our country. It's probably done for, you know, a greater market. So we were given the car to test drive, and we got basically the baby, the A200 Saloon. Now, we took this car out, we picked it up. It looks nice. I wouldn't say it looks great, but it looks nice. It looks very German, the lines and everything else. You get into the car, whoa, it's the C-Class interior. Everything that the C-Class and the E-Class has, almost visually, it's there. The nice long screens, the touch panel, the multifunction steering wheel with the little tabs on it, the center console, you know, the touchpad and everything else. All the great toys that people like RAF love.
I admit, yes.
You know, I...
Ooh, shiny.
I just like my simple knobs and one or two buttons, you know? But this car is packed to the brim. And I remember bringing it home and my youngest son saw it and he was totally dazzled by it. Beyond being just a Christmas tree, it's just dazzling. And you know, it's funny how a teenager can so quickly understand how to work it without looking at the manual. Myself, even after getting training from the Mercedes-Benz PR people, I still had trouble trying to figure out a few things.
Have you seen a kid with an iPad nowadays?
Exactly. Exactly. But you know, an iPad is, you know, almost self-learning. But you know, you get into this guy and the teenager just ta-ta-ta-ta-ta and he's done. And I'm like, you know, what did he do? I did ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. Can you show me again? But anyway, it's a wonderful car in terms of cabin experience. Surprisingly, it's quite spacious. Okay, I'm not a very tall guy. I'm not like Richard's size, but you know, I could fit in nicely.
Would you compare it to like a slightly bigger Vios? Like in terms of size, obviously not. In terms
I would
of
say more
else.
like a Honda City, because a Honda City has got a little bit more space.
Yeah.
Okay, it's got a bit more space. It's got a nice little boot. The boot actually is a decent size, 420 liters. So that's not too bad. You can actually go a weekend away with the family. It's not a huge car. But anyway, that's about the car, the look, the size, the interior functionality, all just like the C-Class and E-Class. We've talked about it before. You know, hey, Mercedes, you talk to it, it'll talk back to you. You can have a joke with it. You can talk to it. You can ask it to do things, check things for you. Navigation, everything else, done. Now, comes the best part. When I opened the engine bay, I saw a function, a part of the engine bay that looked really, really unusual. So I looked further and I noticed that it actually looked like a McLaren engine bay, one part of it. Against the firewall.
What?
Yes. And actually, if you go and see the pictures in color, you'll notice it on the website. Part of the engine bay facing the firewall, there's a lot of chrome, there's a lot of like off gold, silver color. That whole part looks like as if it came from a McLaren. No relationship to the fact that McLaren uses Mercedes engines, but it's just that the way it's been done. And I actually took that picture and I put it online and said, what engine is this? And nobody could guess it's from a Mercedes-Benz. Nobody even guessed it came from a normal car. All supercars were named. But anyway, that's how that engine bay looks like. Very small engine. And here's the best part. The engine is jointly made with Renault.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Now, Mercedes and Renault have been working together on producing small engines to be shared. So this is a 1332cc engine. 1.3.
Yeah.
Turbocharged. Yet, it's got 163 brake horsepower, which a lot of people will frown and say, enough power. But nowadays, 163 is not the main thing. It's the torque.
Yep.
250 Newton meters. That's a lot of torque for a small car.
And at 1620 RPM, that's so low.
Exactly. And then, you know, the 0 to 100 is 8 seconds. Top speed, they claim 225. I went up to 180 on a deserted highway. Very easily done. Now, of course, most of the time I was driving this car alone or with my kids. Now, if there's 5 adults, you will feel the weight in a car like this, but still, you don't buy a Mercedes like this to go speeding around and zipping around. It's a 1.3, it's turbocharged. You're saving on road tax, you're saving on fuel. You know, it's still a Mercedes-Benz. And the price, $229,000.
That is a very affordable price.
Yes, but it's not the cheapest Mercedes-Benz in the portfolio.
Would that be the hatch?
The cheapest is actually the GLA 200. Huh. Which is just a few thousand cheaper, and that's CKD. This car is CBU at 229. So I think, hey, something to think about. So I came up with three scenarios of why someone will buy this car. Number one, if you need a family sedan with a premium image, you know, someone like Richard who needs to show people that he's got a good job and everything else, this is the Saloon to look at. Scenario two, you're looking for a second car for the wife, you know, and your kids are going to private school, which is what Arif's future kids will be going to, you know.
Excuse me?
And then, you know, the wife doesn't want to drive to the private school in a Japanese car.
Right, right.
Or a Korean car, you know.
It's got to be German.
She needs something German, or at least premium. So you get a car like this. And number three, some people who are doing small businesses, you know, SMEs, somehow or other in Malaysia, you still need to arrive in a nice car. So whether you arrive in this or a C or an E, you still are in that, you know, that prestige image. So at 230,000, why not? Nothing else to say, gentlemen.
Arif, tell me more about his kids you've got planned. You know, Daniel's got plans for you.
I mean, at this rate, the cost of living and everything, I don't think I could even afford a house
right.
at all.
Okay, then. So the 5-point inspection.
Yes, sir.
Right. Competitors, then. Who are its immediate competitors?
Immediate in the market at the moment, there's only one, the Audi A3. The right. BMW sedan has not come yet.
And what did you really like about it? I mean, I know you spent a bit of time talking about the shiny interior and you kind yes. of skipped over a lot of that. You weren't so keen on that?
Well, you know, at my age, the shiny interior, you know, it's nice, but I don't need a lot of those functions.
What did you really like about it then?
You see, I've always liked small cars. And the fact that there's a small car, premium image, five adults can get in, or, you know, my family can get in. There's five of us. We can get in and it's comfortable.
And what didn't you like about it?
Okay, what I didn't like was that I just can't accept that Mercedes tablet thing. That touchscreen.
Oh, okay, boomer.
You know, I'm... You know, because I always keep thinking, because I use a smartphone, I have a tablet at home. At some point, it'll hang and, you know, I have to restart it. And what if it happens to this thing? You know, I mean, it's going to be painful to restart something like that, you know?
Mm. I mean, it should just be on and off,
bing,
right?
Bing, bong, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
That's
so,
what they say about smartphones. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Most of the time that works, but...
Really?
But... Is
have you tried turning it off and on again?
Classic IT crowd line.
Yes.
Is it actually big enough for a young family? It's, let's say, like two kids in their early 30s, okay, and all that stuff.
Let's get this.
Two
husband
kids
and wife?
In their early 30s.
I mean, everybody's
parents,
complaining
parents,
about like...
Parents. You
children
parents,
not leaving
parents.
Home until like they're 30-something yeah. years old. Yeah.
That's Arif at the moment. Well, no. Young couple, two kids, say 5 and 3, two baby seats in the back. Possible.
Do you think that they will outgrow the car?
Well, you can, but looking at it, if budget does not permit, I don't see why you can't keep this car for 10 years.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, unless you're really, you know, looking at, you know, some upgrading your image, but I don't see a problem keeping it for 10 years.
Final question. Have you driven the Audi A3 sedan?
Yes.
So this or that?
I think the Audi A3 has got a little bit more space.
In terms of like how it drives, how it feels?
Oh, it drives and everything.
It's a complete car.
I actually prefer the dynamics of the Audi.
Oh.
Ooh, well, there
you
go.
Think, cool. I think it's because of this engine. I think at the back of my mind, I'm still thinking 1.3, 1.3, 1.3, 1.3. You know?
Even though it's got that little shiny segment inside.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Not enough.
The shiny bits are not distracting.
Not enough. Well, there we go then. That's the final word on the Mercedes-Benz A200 Saloon. Right, if you only just tuned in, you've missed the show, you silly people. That means you have to listen to the podcast, which will be available from all of the places that you normally listen to your podcast. And of course, we are on Spotify. We've spoken about child seats, the National Car Project, the National Automotive Policy, and of course, just then, the review of the Mercedes-Benz A200 Saloon. We have an Instagram page
at BFM Cruise Control. You can check out a lot of pictures of that GLC we were talking about in the local car launches, and Daniel's website for that fancy gold silver thing inside the car.
The car engine.
That's dsf.my.
We're back same time, same place next week for Cruise Control here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.